Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario. This is the Electric Drum. And right now I am speaking with Reverend Rob Smith, who is going to be speaking at this year's MLK Love March over at Shiloh Baptist. Thank you very much for your time.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
And now, how did you get started? Well, where are you from?
I'm from New Haven. I'm a proud New Havener. New Haven all my life. Lincoln Bassett Elementary School. At that time, it was Jackie Robinson Middle School. It's merged now, so it's King Robinson. But at that time, it was just Jackie Robinson. The old building, the old factory building.
The old penitentiary, the old basement.
Yes, yes, where we had the red house.
Yes.
The green house. The yellow house and the blue house. We had all of that. And then Hill House.
Let's go back to Lincoln Bassett.
Okay, let's do it. Let's do it.
Were you there with Eleanor Boyd?
Yeah. Eleanor Boyd was fourth. She came my last year. I had Mr. Marable.
Mr. Marable, okay.
Mr. Marable was he was before her. And then, I had Eleanor Boyd 1 year.
Mr. Lung, the gym teacher?
I don't remember.
You remember Mr. Lung? You
know, no, I don't.
How about music? Remember music, Miss Bess?
Honestly, I don't remember Miss Bess. The music teacher I remember, the first music teacher I remember was Miss Taylor.
Okay.
That was a Jackie Robinson.
Okay.
I don't remember my music teacher in elementary school. That's crazy. I should. I feel bad.
Who do you remember from elementary school?
My teachers.
Who was that?
So I had my first grade teacher was Miss Freeman.
Yep.
I don't remember my kindergarten teacher's name. Then I had Miss Carolla. Then I had Miss Bagley. Then I had Mr. and Mrs. Guido.
Oh, Mr. and Mrs. Yeah, they were husband and wife.
That's right.
Right next to Mr. Path.
Right. Wait a minute.
Yes, I did. Yes, I went to Lincoln Bassett. That's why but I was Mrs. Say. And I had Miss London, Miss Daddy O for a year.
What year?
This is way back. We were close because
you have to be.
Eleanor Boyd came during my second grade, third grade, okay. And then I had Verdell Roberts in my last year.
Oh,
so I was a little bit after
right
you,
right behind me.
Yep,
and that's great. Small world, too small.
Small world, living in the Ville over there. See,
I was on
Bassett and Newhall.
Bassett,
so I was right by the dry cleaners.
Yeah, I know exactly where you were.
Yeah.
So I was on Winchester Avenue.
Oh, so you were right down the street Ivy.
Winchester and Star.
Star, oh.
Yeah, so I lived across the street. One of the big landmarks over there for a period of time was Fun City Photo. I don't know if you remember Fun City Photo. And then, of course, the Oasis was right there. You had 7-Eleven right there. The Jump is still there, a.k.a. The Jump, but it's the Taurus.
The Taurus now.
Right,
yep,
right.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's what it is, man.
Okay, very good. Small neighborhood.
Yes.
Lovely neighborhood growing up. Things have changed over time.
A lot.
I mean, we used to run around until the lights, you know, the lights went on. Then we might go home.
It's so funny you even bring that up about running around until the lights. I was so I do funerals. One of the things that I do, right? That's actually my secular career. Two things I do. I pastor, and I work for the funeral homes. So I was at a funeral yesterday. What today is what? No, Saturday. today. So I had a funeral today. Okay, so the funeral Saturday, there was a guy who got up and gave reflections about his deceased loved one. And we were talking about our age group, you know, growing up. And he started bringing up games like hot peas and butter. Man, I laughed so hard. I had a belly laugh. I'm like, I haven't heard the phrase hot peas and butter. But that was growing up, man. I mean, how innocent were we, right? As kids, just trying to, you know, find our way. Just, you know, couldn't wait to grow a mustache. You know, boys becoming men. And all in Newhallville.
All in Newhallville. Time, we are a weird generation because we grew up making mud pies.
Yes. Yes.
And yes. Break dancing on cardboard boxes.
Yes. Yes.
Hanging out on stoops.
Yes.
But we also saw technology come about.
Yeah, it was like it was no such thing as technology it seemed then, right?
No.
Of course it was technology, but it was so different. It was a slower world. It was like so, I mean, we had
encyclopedias. Yeah, we had books.
Now the encyclopedia's in your phone, right? We had to go to libraries, right? Who goes to libraries? Almost, I don't even know how libraries have survived. I mean, there are other things going on. But the world was so slow. Everybody didn't have a microwave.
No.
Right? There was still a lot of people in the community.
That had VCRs.
VCRs.
Betas. We used to have the store cable boxes with the cable on them.
Yes. Yes. I mean, what a change. What an evolution the past 30, 40 years.
As you've seen in the past couple of years, especially where you have a church, you're a pastor, has COVID and technology changed the way you pastor and deliver the word?
Absolutely. Absolutely. COVID, believe it or not, so I pastor the conservative church. When I say conservative, I don't mean our style of worship, but conservative in terms of what's out here. Like, this is the age, this is the day where we really have mega church. There are some mega churches, not a lot in this area, but churches are big, right? So we had, prior to COVID, we were doing well in our church. We had 130 members, and the reason I know that number is because at the time we were in the market for purchasing a building, and the banks are rough on churches because churches are really, it's a really unique space, and the way that, you know, you make a business decision while you're in the process of building churches, they call the people, the parishioners, they call them giving units. They want to know how many giving units, and when you want to do church business with a bank, they tell you they want to know the amount of giving units, and then they want to know the dispersion. They want to know the percentage that each person is given, because if you have two people who are giving, like, let's say 30% of the offerings, right, they want to know who are those two people and what's the likelihood that they'll remain in your church and not relocate, right? Like, they ask all of these questions that may seem to be intrusive, but they're good business questions for the landscape of church. So at the time, prior to COVID, we had 130 members, I remember, and I know that number, and I can tell you everything about the numbers because we were forced to know those numbers. We had 130 members. By the time COVID settled down, we had lost 80 members. We lost 80 members in COVID in a small church. That's such a huge number. And I don't know what the impacts of COVID were from, you know, one congregation to the next, but everybody had their war stories and, you know, their fair complaints about how COVID changed everything. And when it came to worship, it really didn't change my delivery nor my message, what I preach, but what it did change, it changed a little bit. Let me be a little bit more clear in my thought process. It made me a little bit more politically correct because we could take the gloves off and kind of be relaxed prior to COVID. But once everything went online, man, you got preachers going viral all the time for talking and having, you know, more conversational preaching moments. And we had to be a little bit more conscious of the conversational preaching moments. and just be a little bit more careful, because we're living in a hypersensitive generation. Everybody's extra sensitive now. And the things that you would probably say boldly prior to COVID, you pretty much don't nowadays, because everybody, you know, it's always, and it's the sound, it's the, what do you call it, sound bites. They take the sound bite. They'll take a statement you make and completely out of context. They could care less about the context in which you said it. Said it in, and they'll say, oh, but you said that. You said that. Why did you say that? And they'll put you on blast. Before you know it, you're all over the internet, right? You're going global. You're going viral. And COVID made me a little bit more sensitive and a little bit more conscious, especially when I saw some of my friends who are also preachers, you know, going down the wrong road and end up in interviews like this even.
But they were on the not for the positive, though.
Right? They're right. They were defending themselves for something that they would say, and a lot of times it's just churchy. It's church stuff. So the church has been forced to be a little bit more accountable in those preaching moments. In the preaching moments, in particular. I mean, you still deal with what you deal with in your meetings and whatever other settings. But when you go live and you're doing church now, you gotta look at it as if you're preaching to thousands, and you may only be preaching to 70, but you better be conscious that thousands can see it.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario. This is the Rev. Rob Smith, looking at the time, because I already told him that we be flying by when the conversation get good. You know how that is, just like church.
Just like church.
How long does a bad sermon last?
Oh my goodness, it's an eternity.
Yeah. Let's go back to the childhood. Your mom and dad raised you, or grandma, or
man. So how did I, you know? So interesting. I mean, I'm gonna be honest. I can talk about it now. I didn't like to talk about it growing up, but I've discovered some things about myself. I went through chronic depression.
Mm-hmm.
I'm answering your question, but I'm telling the story.
Yeah.
Went through chronic depression from the ages of 5 years old to 10 years old. For 5 years, I cried every day of my life. And it was a terribly sensitive time in my life. And I had to be very careful who I emoted in front of, because there was a, believe it or not, there was a label.
Oh, of course.
That was coming, because it said, oh, he's going to be soft.
He's a crybaby.
He's a crybaby. He's sensitive. He's tender, blah, 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 blah. And the truth of the matter is, I was depressed. And I really didn't know until maybe like 25 years later. Like, and I look back down that timeline. 1980 is when it got set off. So you ask the question, you know, what was it like growing up? Neither of my parents raised me. My mother and father, they had a relationship that ended in divorce. It was just my brother and I, my brother Al. So it was Al and Rob. And at the age of 5, I'm 5, he's 4 years older than me, he was 9 years old. The woman who was raising me was my mom. Well, I called her mom, but she was my grandmother.
Hmm.
And she died at 5 years old. When she died, my mother was overseas. She was in the military. My father had started a new life, but he was in Hartford. And really not in a position to take my brother and I. My mother being across the world, we just weren't interested in going. And she didn't force it. She didn't make it happen. And for a number of reasons. I won't get into that exactly. Mm-hmm. But we ended up being raised as orphans by a woman who is mom, who was the pastor of the church that I pastor now. And her name was Reverend R. Dell Tucker. And we were raised in a situation and in circumstances that weren't ideal, because it was a revolving door. It was almost like living in a college dorm as a child, not really having that language for it, but there were always travelers. There were always evangelists in and out of town. There were always people. There were always conventions. There were always congregants. And my mother, Reverend Tucker, she only had one biological child, but she left the door open for people who needed a place to go. So we ended up, man, any day of the week, you could have 9, 10 people living in this house, sleeping in this house, and be there for a period of time. I mean, we were constantly bringing people in and out of the house. That's how I grew up. I grew up under those circumstances and conditions, which was crazy, you know? But it worked. It was life. And here I am, man. I'm okay.
Wow.
True story.
That is amazing. And growing up through those hardships and overcoming those hardships psychologically,
yeah.
For many of us, it is a big ordeal. I mean, because at that time, there's no definitions and understanding of what people were going through because it was not there. Not like now. Now, there's a name and title for everything.
Everything.
Back then, there's not. There wasn't nothing. How did you persevere and what do you dedicate your resilience to?
Honestly, this is going to sound so churchy or maybe even corny to the non-church person, but it was nobody but God. Nobody but God who just absolutely put things in place for my brother and I to survive. When I say there were people in and out of the house, I'm not talking about normal people. I'm talking about people who were broken. People who were homeless. People who had questionable character. People who were, in some cases, fresh out of prison. When we were growing up, there was a disease that took over the world called AIDS. We had AIDS victims in and out of the house. Lived on Winchester Avenue. We had crack. We had crackheads in and out of. My brother and I, we have an incredible street consciousness. And we have incredible survival skills because of how we grew up. But man, when I was about 15 or 16 years old, I probably could have used a therapist, you know? But at that time, they thought you were out of your mind if you even suggested anything like a therapist or need for a therapist, because that meant you were weak. Or that meant you were, quote, I hate to use this word, but you were crazy, right? And these were words that, you know, we use in our neighborhoods on a regular basis. No, just really needed somebody to talk to. That's all. And do I think, looking back, that I would have been better off if I had someone to talk to? I'll quickly say yes at times. There were times when I don't think anybody could understand. So what did I do? I did like a lot of people do. I went and found sedatives. I went and found things that the Bible calls sin. Right? And not looking for trouble, just looking for relief. Just sometimes change my mood. What can I do to feel better about my reality? Because my reality is not always ideal. And the whole time, let me remind you, no mom and dad.
No guidance. No.
So there was guidance from the woman who raised me, who is a great person, a phenomenal person. But no father, man. Still no father. So when I went to school, when you go to school, they say 80% of educators are what? Are white women, right? So to find a black man in a school in our neighborhood is like gold. I remember in Jackie Robinson, we were blessed to have Ed Joyner. Ed Joyner was my principal. Not only did we have Ed Joyner, we had Mr. Clarence Roberts. He was a history teacher. And then we had Mr. Wyatt Jackson. He was our gym teacher. That was a phenomenal model right there. That was like a trio. And if I'm missing any other men, I do apologize. But those were just people who stood out to me. They were men. They were black men. They were successful men. They were caring men. They were sacrificial men. They were men who were present. And a lot of times it was those guys. And then when I went home at night, I turned on television and I watched a show called The Cosby Show. Cliff Huxtable. TV dad. I listened to his advice and how he raised his children on television. I listened to Mr. Jackson, Mr. Joyner, Mr. Roberts. And for a good number of years, that was all the fatherly advice I got. Mm.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, The Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario. This is Reverend Rob Smith breaking it down, showing the importance of having that male role model in your life to help navigate and make those tough decisions. Now, as you're navigating life, right, and yes, you're trying to make, when did you start making the right decisions? Because we go through a period where we make a lot of bad decisions. Mm-hmm. What clicked for you for changing that around?
Well, I've been intentional about life. So what I mean by that, I learned, like, I guess, like most people learn, you know, trial and error, making mistakes. Mistakes can be an absolute blessing. If you go into it with your eyes open, you can learn. And that's one of the things I learned in my late teens and early 20s, the importance and the power of mistakes. Most of the learning that we really, 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 really embrace in life comes from the mistakes. So I'm going to go ahead and say, man, I made a lot of mistakes. And in all of my mistake making, I did some learning. And one of the things I try not to do in life is I try not to make the same mistake twice. Not always successful at it, but at least the big stuff, I don't think I repeat it. Constantly trying to learn, constantly trying to learn. Making decisions, big decisions. Like I said, I had to make some mistakes, but you know, I learned a lot of things from classmates, from coworkers, from other cultures. I've had some coworkers that was from other parts of town, right? And just learning different things about things as far as traveling is concerned, as far as you know. Getting married, right? You know, how do you celebrate at a wedding? You know, when I learned, I was working at Aetna Life Insurance Company, which was my first professional job out of college. There was a guy who was the best man at one of his real good friend's weddings. And he told me, and he was a regular guy. We had jobs together. We worked in the same space. He told me that he gave his best man, after he gave a speech, he gave an envelope with $1,500 in it as a wedding gift. And I almost had a stroke. I said, "You did what?" He said, "Yeah, man." He said, "I was the best man. I got to step up." I said, "But why'd you give so much money?" He said, "That's really not that bad." He said, "That's kind of what you're supposed to do at weddings." I'm like, "That's what who's supposed to do?" I said, "Are you rich and you didn't tell me?" He's like, "Nah, man, you prepare for it. But when you get married," he said, "you know, you're trying to help the husband and wife, you know, get a good start in life." This is a conversation I had never had. Mind you, at the time, I'm at least somewhere between 24 and 26 years old. Blew my mind. It's a whole nother world. It's a whole nother culture. So what did that do? Did it teach me that I need to go to weddings and give, you know, huge gifts? No, that's not all that it taught me. It taught me about preparation for life. It taught me to be conscious of my spending habits. Not just, you know, again, because I want to be, you know, the number one best man in town, but just it just changed my entire perspective on life readiness and what it takes, because I didn't have that kind of an upbringing per se. And some of the things that other groups would probably take for granted. Just things I didn't have. And I didn't learn that from my dad. I didn't learn that from my mom. I learned that from coworkers and friends and classmates. And there were other lessons similar to that that I learned along the way. And of course, I made some mistakes, right? And then from learning from the mistakes, you know, then you finally become the person that you are.
I want to go a little bit and talk about college. You're orphaned. You're trying the best you can, navigating life and navigating things. How did you end up going to college, and what was the push?
Oh, man.
Where you go to high school?
Hill House.
Oh, okay. Right. You're academic. That's okay. You're acceptable.
It was kind of drilled in us. Everybody talked about it. Go to college. And one of the funny things about it is I really didn't know what I wanted to do initially. So when I went to, you're going to get a kick out of this. I get to Central. I had three options. Played a little baseball, had an opportunity on a partial baseball scholarship to go to some school in Virginia, too far away from home. I didn't want to go. I was okay, kind of smart. Had an opportunity to go to Dartmouth again, but that wasn't a baseball scholarship thing. It was an academic thing, but I would have been able to play baseball. But again, too far from home. End up going to Central, didn't even play baseball. When I get to Central, I'm on campus. I graduated top 20% of my class from Hill House, which is not like a huge accomplishment, but it was decent. It was cool. I had decent SAT scores, what have you. But I don't know what I'm going to study. I have no idea. 17 years old, my voice is similar to what it is now. The guidance counselor says, "You don't know what you want to be?" I said, "I'm really not sure. What are my options?" You know, it just we didn't have a lot of conversation and preparation in high school about it. And if we did, I missed those classes. So I'm really on campus, you know, for the first time, not sure what's happening. She said, "You have a really nice voice." She said, "Have you ever thought about communications?" I said, "What is that?" Right? So I signed up immediately to be a communications major. That was the initial launching of my college platform, a communications major, which I ended up not liking. And I didn't like it not because it wasn't a good fit for me. I didn't like it because the instruction just really didn't connect. So I ended up changing and I went into business. So I studied business administration, and that worked out. That was cool. Did some good things, some cool things. But yeah, going to college was just it was what you were supposed to do, and I really went because it was drilled in us. But really didn't have a lot of straight up college preparation, which is quite different in how I go about pastoring our young people and fathering my own children. We start college conversations in my house at 11 years old.
Wow.
At 11, that's sixth grade, not to make a permanent decision, but we began the conversation and we began talking about it. And it's been working out. You know, we've had some success with college, with the children and the children at the church, because I want to make certain that when they get to that campus, that they're not in the position that I was. Because I'm telling you now, I was clueless. I was in trouble. But it worked out.
January 15th, what are you going to be doing?
January 15th, I'm going to be with my good friend. My good friend, Pastor Hampton, and the great people of Shiloh. Man, you don't know how excited I am. I'm so honored. My mother, the one who raised me, Reverend Dr. Ardell Tucker, was colleagues with the man who started this march. He's affectionately known as Old Man Hampton because of, you know. And Reverend Hampton was a pillar in our community. He was all about this march, man. It's one of the greatest parts of his legacy that he left in the city. And as a child, watching that, you know, that whole process, the march, the service, the event, the passion, the cause. And now to have this opportunity to be a part of it and to have something to say on that day, it's unbelievable.
For those listening, the January 15th is the actual birthday to the great Reverend Martin Luther King, which is celebrated as part of the Love March, where the congregation known as Shiloh Missionary Baptist walks around the neighborhood like they did 40, 50, 60 years ago in solidarity in regards to the civil rights movement and have kept that tradition alive because that it's in jeopardy to stand up for yourself because you, as you mentioned, being politically correct now, you can't be saying anything and everything willy-nilly.
Be careful.
So what is the message going to be? Can we get a little tidbit of what the message is going to be on that January 15th?
Oh, the message. you know, I try to always tuck that in. But I will say this. We will talk about Dr. King on that day, and we will talk about our economic status, the status of America, the status of Black America. There will be some advice. We'll give some advice that day. There will be some instructions. There will be some points in which we can take away from because we need some strategies, man. We're going to have to do something different if we're ever going to have something different. You know, it's no need of us talking and talking and talking. We are going to have to do something different. And we're going to have to, we got to start by thinking differently because you'll never do different if you don't think different. So there are going to be some talking points, some things to consider, some things to think about on that day. And that's about all I really, really can say now.
Okay. All right. You're being stingy with it. I appreciate that. This is the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Canelar. This is the good Reverend Rob Smith sharing a story. I want to thank you for your time. Look at that. Time flies when you're having a good time. Didn't I say that?
You said that.
How long does a bad sermon last?
Forever. Thank you. I appreciate that.
You got the floor. Anyone you want to thank? Anyone you want to shout out? Anything you want to tell our community right now?
First of all, I want to say thank you to you for the call, the invitation to come in and share these moments and to share a little bit of my story. I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful for this. So it's not something that I do often. I have done it a couple of times in other spaces and other times. And in every chance, I'm grateful. People don't have to consider you. People don't have to include you on their platform. This is your platform, and you work this platform. I listen to the Electric Drum, and when you called me, I was all teeth. I was grinning. I said, this is crazy, man. I said, I'm considered for the Electric Drum. I'm going to be on the radio. And, yeah, it's happening because you considered me, and I appreciate it. I just want to let you know. And I mean, if there's anything I can do along the way while you're working your platform and doing different things in the community, please let me know. Give me a call, man.
All right. And you know what? Look, I'm just a conduit. This is a platform. They say, you know, bring on people. Mm-hmm. And I look for everyone in our community that's making a difference, not only made a difference in their lives, but making a difference in other people's lives through their own energy and their own growth. With that said, what's your message to the people out there in New Haven on your way out?
My message to the people is the same message I gave to kids when I worked in the school system for 10 years. Whenever we got to the end of a year, as we're getting to an end of a year now, it's simple. Don't give up. Don't give up. We will be tested. We will be tried in every area of our life. And the best thing that you'll ever do is keep going.
This has been the words, the philosophical, God-inspired words of the good Reverend Rob Smith. I'm Jose Candelario. This has been the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. And like always, to everyone out there, thank you for your time and thank you for listening.
This was fun.